Yay!
Welcome, listeners, to the second edition of Carrie and Emmy Remember, to the best of their abilities, not the Harry Potter books in sequential chronological order, but instead, we are now going to present to you, for preachers and teachers and other communicators and leaders in the church, what we are calling the Preacher's Report this week today.
What Carrie and Remember, what happened this past week to the best of their abilities.
Carrie, do you want to tell everybody who is listening where you are currently serving?
I am currently in Federal Way, Washington, far away from St. Paul, Minnesota, where Emmy is.
This is true.
And serving as an intern pastor at the Lutheran Church.
Yay! And I am currently serving at Humble Walk Lutheran Church and also Light of the World Lutheran Church in St. Paul, because why do one when you can just overload and do two?
Exactly.
Definitely for me, and probably also for you, Carrie, you get people who come up to pastors and preachers and teachers on Sunday and say, "Hey, pastor, did you hear about blank? What do you think about it?"
Right.
Or even more fascinatingly, "Here is my opinion on it, and I expect you to agree with me and give me biblical background for why I am correct."
Right. Or there's those moments as a preacher when you're like finishing up your sermon and then are like, "I think I just missed a huge news story that should have gone into this, and that's bad on my part."
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't be talking about that.
Yeah, because apparently we're supposed to, like, preach with the Bible in one hand and the news in the other.
Yeah, that whole thing.
We're meant to be attentive to the world around us and to be Christians, not just in our 1 hour of church, but in our daily lives.
Right.
I feel like I read that somewhere.
Somewhere. Yeah. Mm. It sounds vaguely familiar.
It sounds like something Augustine tweeted, so that's probably what happened.
Yeah, most likely. Or Facebook status.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So we have put together a list of the texts for this coming Sunday, the Revised Common Lectionary texts, and then we're just going to quickly review those. And then talk about some things that happened in the news, in media, in sports, in social commentary and culture, and give our listeners a little background on everything, and where it might work into the sermon or the text for this week, or just quick facts that you might need to know and have in your back pocket in case someone says to you, "Hey, what do you think about this whole Randy Quaid thing?" And you're like, I don't know.
I don't have an opinion on that because I don't know what it is.
Which is always fine. It's also, let us
yeah,
begin this podcast by saying it's always okay to say, "I don't know."
Right.
You might actually learn more about what your parishioner is trying to say if you just say, "I don't know. Why don't you tell me what's going on?
Tell me more about that." So, the first reading comes from either Job 38, 1 through 7, and then 34 through 41. Or Psalm 104. The thing it says here is, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth?" I find it interesting that they're breaking up Job into different, like, sections. That's a lot of preaching on Job, but I think it's very necessary even to have that as an option in this day and age.
I think it's great, especially, I mean, that's one of the answers that is often given to why bad things happen in the world, which is always an applicable question for a preacher and a question from the audience. It's probably in someone's mind every single Sunday, is like, why is this bad thing happening to me? And Job is one of the answers that we have recorded in the biblical canon about, like, this is why bad things happen, which is not a very clear answer.
Yeah.
But so I like whenever we're pushed into the despair of Job and to deal with the fact that that's a real thing, and that acknowledging our suffering is a thing that is a biblical thing to do.
And shows us, I think, also the way that we try and cope with it and the way that we try and help others through it, both in ways that are helpful and ways that aren't helpful, and in ways that are saying, you know, "Job, just feel better," or, you know, "What did you do wrong?" that are so easy to fall into when we're trying to comfort people and yet do nothing or harm. So it's nice to see a biblical portrayal of humans as they are, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, because Job's friends come along and say, "Oh, well, you clearly did something wrong and you need to repent." And when God shows up at the end, and I think it skips it in this text, but when God shows up at the end of the book of Job and says, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth?" to Job, the friends are in massive trouble and have to, I think Job has to make sacrifices on their part in order to restore them to God.
Yeah.
Because they've been speaking wrongly in the name of God to say to Job, "Oh, this is your fault."
Then we have Isaiah 53, 4 through 12, and Psalm 91, 9 through 16. "Surely he has borne our infirmities and carried our diseases, yet we accounted him stricken, struck down by God, and afflicted."
So it's one of the suffering servant, or right. It's the suffering servant song in Isaiah.
Right.
And if I recall correctly, some parts of Isaiah 53 are quoted in the New Testament in reference to Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and some are not. And I think, so there's always this, you know, this tension of, this is certainly not what they expected the Messiah to be, and yet that is how we understood Jesus acted for us, in the sense of that Jesus carried our sins, and he looked like he had been forgotten by God, and yet was not, because of the resurrection. I mean, it's another great text that's honest about the upside downness of God, and that some of our, you know, sort of our common answers to theological questions are not necessarily the right ones. Just as Job, the answer is not, "Well, surely, clearly you did something wrong if something bad is happening to you." And Job is the answer to that and says, "No, that's not what happened." And Isaiah 53, in some ways, says, if you're looking for the servant of God, you don't look at somebody who is high up and untouched and appears to be lofty and above us. And instead, the person who God calls a servant through the words of Isaiah is somebody who's been bearing sin and diseased and stricken and afflicted and forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great flip in the text.
Yeah, that's actually something that I was thinking about with the gospel passage, Mark 10.
Right, let's go to it.
Yeah. So Mark 10, 35-45, it's the James and John run up to Jesus and they're like, "Hey, we want to sit at your right hand and at your left hand." And Jesus says, "Are you guys really ready for that?" and what that means, and you guys don't know what that means. And they're like, "Yeah, no, we can handle that." And and then Jesus says he doesn't control who will sit at his right and at his left, but that the whole first shall be last and the last shall be first thing comes up yet again in Mark. He's really super into that. But but this actually comes right after another passion prediction, as we call them. So Jesus says, like, "Hey, I'm going to suffer and die and, you know, be spit on and mocked." And then James and John run up to him with this question. To me, and this is just my interpretation, it seems to me that, I mean, they've been waiting for this Messiah to come in and, like, take over the world and knock down their Roman Empire and, you know, raise them to these big, high levels in society. And they got Jesus, who comes in not as a overpowering ruler, but as a servant to all. And so to hear that he'll die, I feel like right after that, their reaction is like, "Nope, no, that can't happen. Like, well, no, we're going to be in glory with you and you will rise up." And so again, I think it also relates to the other text as well, saying that God didn't send a savior that just overcame, you know, ruled everything and was super powerful. God sent in a servant to his people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you see sort of the same thing in the Hebrews text for the day as well, which is Hebrews 5, 1 through 10. "Every high priest is selected from among the people and is appointed to represent the people to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. He," because all priests would have been male,
mm-hmm.
"is able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and going astray, since he himself is subject to weakness." And basically just talks about how priests are called by God and take on this honor of mediating between God and the people, and very much putting the role of priest as servant, like someone who, not someone who lifts himself up and is separate from the people, but who cares for the people and works with them and recognizes where their weakness needs to be made right, and works as a mediator between them and God, and that Jesus is essentially the pinnacle of the royal priesthood.
Right.
So really great texts about who is Jesus? What does that mean for us?
Yes.
So let's get into it. What happened this week? General topic. Presidential campaigns are happening.
Yes.
Dear pastors and preachers, how are you talking about this with your congregation? You may have a congregation that you feel leans left or right or any direction. You may personally feel that you lean in a direction that is not the congregation's, or you need to sort of lead them. Let us remember our tax-exempt status and do not tell your people how to vote. But we do have to figure out how to bring our faith essentially to the ballot box with us. So the first Democratic debate, I think.
The first, yep.
Between Clinton and Bernie Sanders and other slightly less popular or sort of well-known candidates. And it less important than what Clinton said or Sanders or any of the other candidates is, how are you talking with your congregations and helping them to know how to be a Christian and be faithful in the voting season, recognizing that being a Christian does not lead every single person who is a Christian to vote Democratic or liberal, or to vote conservative or Republican, or to vote libertarian, or to vote Tea Party. Like, people who vote for almost every single party, someone believes that it has a connection to their Christian faith. So how do we talk about the fact that we have differences in how we interpret the Christian faith, and how do we, you know, still treat each other nicely when we're dealing with contentious political issues?
At my internship site, there's a men's Bible study that has very different political views. They handle it very well. They're very respectful with each other and get to kind of mock each other in that. But that is one thing that they talk about extensively, is how their faith impacts who they vote for, regardless of which party that candidate falls into. Other stuff that is happening. So I'm a baseball fan, so we got to talk about that for a little bit.
That.
Yeah. So first of all, just have to give a shout out to the Cubs because they're doing awesome.
Yay, Cubs!
Yeah.
So amazing.
Yeah. There has to be some sort of sermon message in there because they're doing really well after decades of being. So go Cubs. Other baseball news. So I don't know if you've heard about this whole Chase Utley thing. So Chase Utley plays for the Dodgers now. He slid into Ruben Tejada, who's a Mets player, resulting in the Mets player breaking his leg, which is not so good. And so not because of the breaking of the leg, though I'm sure that probably added to it. The umpires declared the slide illegal and has suspended Utley. Chase Utley says he's never intentionally meant to hurt him. I believe him. And is challenging the suspension. I'm not sure how that has gone or if there's a ruling on that yet. But I think the interesting thing in this story is that it's become a very much a New York versus LA thing, with both sides kind of having their opinions of saying, you know, this is a completely fair suspension. Anyone would have gotten it, to Chase Utley and, well, not necessarily Chase Utley, but kind of the Dodgers franchise saying, well, if there was a Mets player that did this, they definitely wouldn't have gotten it. Wouldn't have gotten the suspension, you know, because they're New York. I think the bigger picture here is that it's become an us versus them thing. Which is not so great and definitely not a Christian value.
Mm-hmm. More us versus them stuff happening in sort of the what we can best group as the Black Lives Matter movement. The shooting of Tamir Rice, who was the 12-year-old who was playing in a park with an airsoft gun, pretending to point it at people. Neighbors called the police to report this. Multiple cop cars showed up on the scene, and I believe he was shot dead within seconds. And then, of course, in further investigation, they find out he is 12 years old and had an airsoft gun. So this has been one of the many deaths that the Black Lives Matter movement has identified as a symptom of continuing racism in America and of elevated police brutality. The county office was doing further investigation in the shooting of Tamir Rice, and they have now released two reports that say his death was reasonable. They used reasonable force. Not surprisingly, the family and a lot of other members of the Black Lives Matter movement are deeply upset by this because, again, a 12-year-old was shot while playing with a gun, and they're calling for a special prosecutor to investigate further. And in addition, in Baltimore, which has also seen police violence that has resulted in the death of a Black man, there was an interim police commissioner appointed, and now the city has permanently appointed Kevin Davis as Baltimore Police Commissioner, and the Black Lives Matter movement doesn't feel that this is a good move because they don't feel he's been doing enough work on behalf of people who are victimized or brutalized by police. So there are more protests going on in Baltimore. There was a overnight protest going on at City Hall. So essentially, there's a lot going on that's still very contentious around accusations of police brutality or police distrust or, you know, reasonable use of force, etc. This is another big issue that we, especially if you are a member of the ELCA, we are the most white Protestant denomination in America. And we are actually the least racially diverse. Like, even churches that are traditionally racially homogenous, like African American churches, are more diverse than the ELCA.
Oh, gosh.
And the shooting at the Charleston AME church was carried out by a young man who was raised in the ELCA, Dylan Roof. And really, no matter what denomination you are, if you're listening, if you have not found a way to talk to your parishioners and to allow, at least, for conversation in your churches about what is happening, what do we do with these reports of police brutality? How do we know when to take things seriously? How do we know how to understand our own biases against one part of the system or another, or against the oppressor or against the oppressed? How do we, you know, learn how to self-reflect? It is past time to figure out how to do that. And it is a really hard conversation because nobody likes having them and nobody likes facing potential racism in themselves or in their institutions. And yet we need to. Mm-hmm. We need to if we're really going to take the whole Christ message seriously. Because our brothers and sisters are involved in this entire situation. There are Christians on the police force. There are Christians in the Black Lives Matter movement. We are all children of God. And we need to figure out how to resolve really big, contentious, violent issues that spill over into our legal system.
I completely agree. I think it's something that the church definitely needs to address. It's gone on too long. We need to have these discussions. And as you say, Emmy, it is an entire us versus them sort of thing, and not just in the way I think that it's been publicized, because I think a lot of people, at least in my experience, a lot of people have expected Christians to be completely on the Black Lives Matter movement, and I completely agree, Black Lives Matter, you know, we need to address the racism that is occurring in our institutions. However, that does not automatically mean I'm like anti-cop. And so I think you bring up a very good point of there are people on both sides of this issue that are Christians, and we need to recognize that. And all people are children of God. Mm-hmm. And so we can't create even more of an us versus them in our society.
Right. And I'm not saying the point is, you know, don't talk about it at all because we're all children of God and therefore let's sweep it under the rug. It's more like we're all children of God, so we have to talk about this.
One thing that I saw in my New York Times update this morning was that Lamar Odom, who played for the LA Lakers and was very famously married to Khloe Kardashian and still technically is, like something.
They haven't done the divorce papers yet, I don't think.
But I read somewhere that they are, like, they signed the divorce papers, but they haven't been, like, notarized or they haven't been finalized or something. So Lamar Odom was found unconscious at a brothel in Nevada with a lot of drugs in his system. There's a lot of rumors and gossip going around. They're being pretty tight-lipped as to exactly what happened and what was going on there. There's been various reports. I don't really want to spread gossip, so I'm not going to, like, divulge into them, but... But basically what we know is that he's unconscious in a coma in a hospital somewhere, or in Nevada. And I think that that's, again, like, that's the underlying thing that we need to talk about is the fact these people who we hold to such high esteems for being celebrities or being really good at sports or being a good actress, singer, whatever is giving them fame, and what that fame does to them, and also the fact that they're human, but also just the complete destruction that a person can go through. And it doesn't matter who they are or what their status is. you know, fame probably attributed to this, and also, you know, other factors that I have no idea. But I think that it's something that we need to talk about, and talking about what we do to celebrities, how we put expectations on them, and also how we put expectations on just the general people around us, and what we do when they screw up, and this kind of thing happens.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, because I've seen, working in the suburbs, one of the churches that I serve is in a suburb, and the sort of desire to look like everything is put together is very strong there. Not that it's not necessarily present in rural or urban areas, but it's very strong in the suburbs where you experience a lot of where you can experience a lot of isolation. And the importance of saying, A, we're going to talk about this child of God, Lamar Odom, with respect, and the family with respect, and B, how do we treat ourselves with respect? And say, like, when we need help to the point at which the easiest way to deal with our problems is to pursue something that blocks them out completely, like, how do we find the help that we need that can help us get through those feelings rather than blocking them out?
And, yeah. And I think, too, it's a topic that can be very helpful in churches, because I think that there's many churches where the culture is, you know, you put on your best face to walk into church, and you go there in your fancy clothes, and you sit there with your family, and you're very, you know, you pretend that everything is okay because you're among people that you want to think you're okay. But in reality, the church should be a place where you can come in and say, I am completely broken and messed up, and here is why, and help me. Creating that culture is much more important and much more helpful.
It takes us very much back to the Job text, where not necessarily the assigned text for the Sunday, but the whole story of Job, that it's about saying to God, excuse me, I'm in a severe amount of pain.
Right.
I need, you know, and turning to friends and saying, I need help. And when that help doesn't get provided, the brokenheartedness that is experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So just towards the end of this week, and this is not that a lot of the news that we've been reciting is good, but this one's just especially awful. Two teenage brothers who belong to a church called Word of Life in upstate New York were beaten. One was fatally beaten, and the other, I think, is in critical condition now, as part of what is called a spiritual counseling center, or spiritual counseling session. I think some reports are saying the parents and the sister had brought them there to get them to confess. We don't know exactly what they were supposed to confess to, but basically that the idea was the church was beating them sort of into submission. Fortunately, one of the brothers is at least hospitalized, but one life was lost. The brothers are named Lucas and Christopher, 19 and 17. There's not a lot of information on the church, but it appears to be small, very biblical. I think one news report said the brothers were urged or encouraged or compelled to read the Bible for 2 hours a day by their parents who belonged to this church. And it sounds like a lot of people were living in the church building. But this case of, you know, of severe spiritual abuse, you know, physical, and probably there's components of verbal and emotional abuse in that too.
Mm-hmm.
And basically we're putting, you know, a lot of churches will, unfortunately, will put someone's spiritual or emotional life in danger if they're not conforming to the way the church wants to act. And now we have this extreme example of physical danger if you're not doing whatever the church wants to do. I don't really know what the lesson is to be gained from this, except that we're all sinners, and even bearing the label of Christian does not somehow magically exempt us or our leaders from being fallen.
Mm-hmm.
To some extent, it makes me thankful for a denominational connection, you know, that I have a pastor that I report to, and a bishop that pastor reports to, and a presiding bishop, and to know that if something went wrong at one stage of the church, it gets reported to someone else, that we're connected in that way. When we separate ourselves, we were just, you know, talking about this with Mar Odom, when we separate ourselves from others and feel like we can't share our brokenness, then that brokenness has a chance to really destroy us. And in this case, I think these boys may not have thought they could go anywhere. I mean, if their parents were encouraging them to go to this church, if the church was teaching them, you know, this is the only way to salvation, if I were in their situation, where I would have thought to turn.
Right.
If I felt like I was being hurt by the church. So I think at the very least, we need to lift them up in prayer this Sunday.
Yeah, that's a truly terrifying story, and definitely something that we need to lift up in prayer. And yeah, I'm thankful for that communities. I mean, I think that communities not only need to help each other, but also hold each other accountable to actions. And this is a community that needs to be held accountable for what was done.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One more rough thing, and then I think we'll get into slightly more positive notes to sort of end this. God, I don't know how newscasters do this every day. Oh, okay. So in a city, Chillicothe, Ohio, I think I'm saying that correctly, there were Halloween decorations in a yard, and I think the neighbors called in some complaints because a woman's body appeared to be part of the decorations, and it was just horrifying and brutally beaten. And when investigation was done, they found out that it was an actual woman.
Oh my gosh.
It's unknown as of yet exactly what happened. It's clear that the woman, and I think the guy who owns the house where her body was found, had been having a fight. We don't know what their relationship was. Her family, of course, is just brokenhearted that her body was, you know, just left after what it appeared, like it appears he hit her with, I think it was a rock or a brick. I mean, I think it's an interesting example, especially because it was a Halloween decoration, right? And so it was left for a couple of days where people just went, oh, okay, there's, you know, there's a dead body in someone's yard. Like, what a creepy scarecrow. And not necessarily that's a judgment on Halloween, which is, of course, you know, if you trace it back to its roots, it's a Christian holiday. But more that it's a judgment on gore and violence in our society, mm-hmm. that we are so normalized to it.
We're desensitized to it.
Our, you know, the primary reaction would be, oh, that's a creepy Halloween decoration.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it might not have, you know, if it weren't Halloween, somebody might have called it in earlier. But it is a judgment on how, to some extent, how we do Halloween, but really how we do all of our, how we do the news, how we do media, you know, the level of violence that we're willing to tolerate as a culture is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, so again, we should be lifting her up in prayer, and I think we should be lifting up everyone in prayer who, for whatever reason, is lost to us because of the brutality that we don't recognize because we're so used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Rebecca Cade, so we have Lucas and Christopher and Rebecca to lift up in prayer on Sunday.
Definitely is a scary observation on our culture. I remember there was a time in college where, I don't remember what movie I was watching, but all of a sudden it started just affecting me, like seeing the violence. I just started getting really freaked out. And I remember thinking, like, I'm becoming resensitized somehow to the violence that I see in the media. And it wasn't only scary to feel, like, to feel myself being so, reacting so intensely to this movie, but also realizing that before I wouldn't have, and how desensitized I truly was to seeing people get shot and, you know, all these terrible things that are just entertainment to us.
Yeah.
Speaking of things being desensitized, let's talk about Columbus Day.
Oh, yes, we do need to talk about Columbus Day. That's true.
You haven't seen the clip from Last Week Tonight with John Oliver from, I think it was a year ago now. They have a segment called Why Is This Still a Thing? And they have a segment on Columbus Day and basically the horrible things that Columbus did in a humorous but very truthful way. Talking about, you know, Columbus not even finding the right place, and not only that, but murdering indigenous people. And the fact that we celebrate this is just ridiculous. And so I think there's some line in there about how they name all the things he did, and they said, although, to be fair, none of those things rhyme with 1492. So, but there are some cities and states that are changing Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. I heard a lot about it because Seattle is a city that is very intent on Indigenous Peoples Day, which I think is a good change, and I think it's something that culture can celebrate, the fact that we're taking something that has been a tradition that we now recognize is not good and are changing it into something that can hopefully bring more life and celebration into who we are as people.
Because we know that the Indigenous people of America have not been celebrated, you know, and when they are sort of brought into culture, they're often heavily stereotyped. And, you know, there's so much that just hasn't been told correctly. And then the abuses that the government has heaped on different Indigenous peoples at different times, you know, with forced internment, or, you know, essentially taking all of their land, forcing them onto reservations that are completely unrelated to where they actually came from or where they had their sacred sites. And you see this high rate of abuse addiction within those communities, and some of it can be attributed to the fact that they've had everything taken from them. And so when we can finally start to recognize that as a nation and to say we're not going to celebrate the destruction of the original people, but instead celebrate their way of life and encourage them to participate in that fully and to, you know, no longer stop speaking their native language and only speak English, but to be able to educate us about what is this country that we moved to? Like, what are the native habits of this country? In the same way that if you move to Paris, you would want to learn the native habits of the French. And I have a lot of hopes for us as we go forward as Americans that we can really respect that much better than we have been doing. Slight shift. Jennifer Lawrence put out an essay this week on pay inequality in Hollywood, because there was some hacking and a leak that basically posted different salaries for different actors and actresses, and surprise, surprise, in the same movie, the actors get paid better than the actresses. Even if you are Jennifer Lawrence and you are a franchise-leading millionaire actress, you're still getting paid less than your co-stars who happen to be male. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer put out an essay about this where she basically said, this is ridiculous, and also talked a little bit about the ways that women are allowed to communicate, and, you know, just in a regular meeting or conversation versus the way that men can communicate. Essentially, the point being, sexism still exists. We should still be concerned about this.
There's a great sketch that Amy Schumer did where it's like a typical boardroom kind of meeting setting, but I think it's all women. And instead of getting anything done, they just continually apologize for the ideas that they have or interrupting anyone or all these things. So nothing actually gets done. Obviously a satire and a parody on the way that women have to navigate the business world and apologize mm-hmm. for their ideas and for speaking up. So look that up. It's pretty good.
Great thing to think about, especially in the context of servanthood leadership of this text for this Sunday. Like, pastors, I challenge you. How often do you talk in your meetings? How often do you talk in a coffee shop when you're meeting one-on-one with somebody? It's awkward to think about. Sorry.
We're here to bring the awkward.
That's right. That's what we do. We're good at that.
Speaking of entertainment stuff, first of all, I just have to say that Aladdin came out on Blu-ray this week, and I'm so stoked because I have waited many years for that thing to come out of the vault, and it's just so good. Movies that are in theaters that are probably more applicable to preaching or what your congregation will be talking about. The one that I'm really excited about is The Martian, which I actually haven't seen yet, but I read the book. And it was awesome and hilarious. And I think a good commentary on society, as many things are. But so, man gets stuck on Mars. And how do you go and find him? And how does he stay sane and survive? Another one that I'm really excited for is He Named Me Malala, which is about Malala, the young girl who won a Nobel Peace Prize. And I'm sure many people know all about her, but I'm really excited to see that movie as well. Heard about Black Mass and I don't know how to pronounce Sicario or something.
Sicario, I think.
I've heard, like, basically all I've heard of them is people being like, I can't wait to see that. And so people might be talking about that. I don't know.
Can't help with that one. No, I am undereducated in movies. Oh, one other thing, positive note, the Minnesota Lynx won the WNBA championship for the third time in 5 years. Pretty much no one cares because it's women's basketball.
Right.
But it's just so sad because they are incredibly skilled, and we are seeing an incredible uptick in skills and talent in the WNBA, which I, being a Minnesota Lynx fan, think the Lynx really set the bar for starting in 2009, and now we're seeing it developing in many other teams. And you think about, like, Brittany Griner, who is one of the first women in the WNBA who can dunk, and kind of what they've had to do in order to shift the game to block her from doing so. Elena Deladon, who plays for the Chicago Sky. She was second round draft pick last year, and she's had a fantastic year. And just like these rising stars who are completely ignored by society in general because they're women and they're playing in women's sports. And until they get to the very, very top, like Serena Williams, or, you know, until the women's soccer team in the USA gets to the World Cup, that's the only time that we pay attention rather than paying attention on a ordinary level in ordinary sports talk the way we do to male sports.
Right.
I would like to see this change. because I think women's sport is amazing. And it really has at the heart of it everything that male sports has, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But they won. It was great. Huge part. Prince came out and played a 3-hour party for them. Like, good job, Lynx. We're going to throw a 3-hour midnight party with Prince playing.
Oh,
it was
Prince.
Epic. It was so Minnesotan. That's, it was so just awesome. Awesome. I'm sure it was hot dish served.
Yeah. I'm sure there was. That's excellent. One thing that I saw just this morning that made me really happy is Oprah was on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Amongst the many things they talked about, they discussed their favorite Bible verses.
Oprah's favorite verse is Psalm 37:4. Take delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. And yeah. Stephen Colbert is Matthew 6:27. Can any of you by worrying add a single hour to your life?
Yeah. Oprah talked about how hers is related to kind of the golden rule or the third rule of motion, that everything that you put forward will come back to you, which Stephen Colbert then brought up that it's like The Secret, which I think was an Oprah book club book. Yeah. So
it absolutely was.
Yeah. So she talks about how, you know, kind of like the whole, how it's also kind of like the concept of karma, where what you put out into the universe, you will get back. That's what she talked about there. Colbert talks about how he loves that Jesus said that worrying won't do anything for you, and that he said that he loves that it's a commandment for us not to worry, and how he's terrible at it because he worries all the time, but he loves that he has a God who says, don't worry about anything, you'll be fine, and that he takes great comfort in that.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Oh, Colbert.
See, I was completely distracted from that because the cast from Welcome to Night Vale, which is one of my favorite podcasts, was also on right after that. And they were on for maybe 2 minutes. And it's a great, it's sort of a Twilight Zone-y podcast. So I think it's really great for thinking about storytelling and how we do creative storytelling. And that kind of ties into church life for me. But I was at NerdCon Stories this last weekend here in Minneapolis, which was a gathering by Hank and John Green of lots of different storytellers from lots of different areas. So like John and Hank are obviously storytellers. Rainbow Rowell, who is a young adult fiction writer, was there. Lots of different authors. The Harry Potter Alliance was there. Harry and the Potters played the Friday evening. It was so awesome. But they did a lot of talking about, like, how do we tell stories and how do we make our stories compelling for people? And I think that is the message I would like to leave our listeners with this week is, what is the compelling story that we are telling for our people? And how do we find the best way to tell that story and make people excited about that story and want to, quote-unquote, subscribe to that podcast or that YouTube channel or whatever it is that we're telling, that is telling that story.
Wonderful. All right. So that is our Preacher's Report for this week. Hopefully you guys found something that was helpful or interesting or thought-provoking this week. And we will join you next week with what's happening in the news.
We do not know yet. If we had that power, we would charge you more for this podcast.
We definitely would.
All right. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everyone.